Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska is a hot area for oil development right now, but don't count on new production there to bail out the state budget anytime soon. That's the takeaway from a previously unpublished memo drafted by the administration of former independent governor Bill Walker. It was sent to key lawmakers the day before the new governor, Republican Michael Dunleavy, was sworn in, but never released to the public. The memo has a surprising message. Oil development in the petroleum reserve would actually cost the state money hundreds of millions of dollars in the short term if prices hover around $75 a barrel. That's because the major company in the reserve, ConocoPhillips, could deduct some of its infrastructure investments from the taxes it pays on its existing oil production. Anchorage Democratic Representative Garen Tarr co-chaired the House Resources Committee last year. She says the new analysis counters the argument that new oil production could quickly fill the state's big budget deficit.
So if they're seeing these headlines, which have been in the news recently about this North Slope renaissance, people are probably thinking, oh, wow, you know, what's going on? You know, is this going to be very positive and this can fix the problem? Well, it's just not going to.
Once the projects are finished and oil starts flowing around 2026, the state will see higher revenues. Over 20 years, the state will come out about $3.8 billion ahead, the memo says. Conoco executive Scott Jepson says oil development is not a drain on the state's economy and argues the memo is misleading because of its focus on the shorter term. And he says oil development also comes with many other benefits outside of revenue for the state budget. There are jobs, local property taxes, and grants to North Slope communities.
If you had no investment, yeah, for a year or so, you might have higher tax revenue. But long term, you're going to see significant shortfalls versus what you would have had if those investments were made. So you got to be careful about how you try to characterize this as being negative on the budget. It's not. It's actually positive in terms of the revenue that the state is going to have to spend, you know, as time goes by.
Officials at the Department of Natural Resources say that the new Dunleavy administration stands behind the analysis. Shortly after Governor Michael Dunleavy was sworn into office, the website with the state's latest plan to address climate change went offline. It was created with months of planning by a team appointed by former Governor Bill Walker. Now more than 1,000 Alaskans are asking the new administration to consider restoring the policy to the state's website. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
On Thursday, two students arrived at the Capitol building with a delivery for the governor. Cook Inlet Keeper started collecting the digital signatures back in mid-December, after the website containing Alaska's newest climate policy vanished. Griffin Plush, a senior at the University of Alaska Southeast, says he thinks Alaskans should have access to these public documents. He wanted to help hand over the petition to get that message across to the governor.
It's really disappointing, and it's really aggravating as a young person.
What these students want to see back up on the state's website is a robust policy that responds to everything from village coastal erosion to ocean acidification. During a transition of power, it's not uncommon for a new administration to take things in a different direction. When Governor Sean Parnell took office, he didn't have much to do with the climate change report created under Governor Sarah Palin. However, the state's website is still linked to it. And that's not the case with the latest policy.
Someone will be out shortly.
Great, thank you.
You bet.
Up on the third floor, Plush and the other student wait to see if Governor Dunleavy will come out of his office to receive the petition.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
After about a minute, someone does come out.
Hi there.
So how do you feel?
But it isn't Governor Dunleavy. A staffer tells them she'll take it, but it's not what she considers a legal petition, since the signatures are digital and not handwritten. She says those are harder to verify. 15-year-old Juno Douglas High School student Lene Linfert says she didn't feel like it was the most welcome reception. But she's going to keep asking the governor to restore the website.
Whether or not we get a response, it doesn't mean that's the end of continuing to advocate for it.
In an emailed statement, Governor Dunleavy's press secretary said, quote, "This administration has no requirement to promote a previous administration's work, product, or political agenda. The working group and report in question are currently under review," end quote. Meanwhile, the Climate Action Leadership Team, appointed by Governor Bill Walker, is still having informal discussions. The plan they created is archived, and it could be hosted on another website in the future. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
A cultural group says Facebook is continuing to remove posts by an Alaska Native artist selling items made of sea otter fur, despite the social media company stating the problem had been fixed. Anchorage Daily News reports the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and Republican U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan issued a statement last week urging Facebook to restore the posts by Tlingit artist Robert Miller. Miller's online posts advertising a sea otter fur hat for sale had been removed. The Institute says the sea otter was legally harvested. Facebook issued an apology last week and said the posts were restored. The Institute's chief operating officer, Lee Kadinger, says Miller's posts were still being rejected as of Wednesday. A Facebook spokesperson said Wednesday the company is reviewing the issue. In Utqiagvik, spring whaling is still about 2 months away, but preparations are already in high gear. That includes making a traditional thread called Ivalu from caribou tendons, which are used to sew together the sealskin boats that whalers take out on the ice. Ravenna Koenig from Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
Diana Martin is the first to arrive at the Inupiat Heritage Center for an Ivalu workshop that will be going on most of the day.
I have my sinews on the floor because they need to stay cool.
So you've got a plastic bag, and what is that?
It's caribou tendons. They need to be splitted, prepared to make strands.
The work actually started months ago, collecting tendons from family members who brought home caribou. Then they had to be dried outside in the cold for several weeks. Now, they almost look like stalks of a plant, beige and kind of stringy. They crunch when you split them apart. After they're split, the strands will be braided into thread. This whole process takes a ton of time and energy. One skin boat can require over 50 tendons, and some years, there are a lot of boats to make thread for.
At one time, there were 17 that were sewn in one spring.
Five of Martin's 12 siblings are whaling captains, so for the past two decades, she's had her hands full almost every year making sinew thread for their skin boats. She also lends a hand to other captains when they ask her. She's one of the teachers at today's workshop.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. The other is Nancy Levitt, an elder and a whaling captain's wife. Yeah. Workshops like this one have been held for the past few years to teach those who are interested how to make the thread.
We learn how to split the sinew. We learn how to clean it for the ladies who would like to learn.
Levitt says the splitting stage is especially difficult because the tendons are tough. Sometimes it takes two people to pull them apart.
It builds up your muscles. It's like you go to the gym, except your arms work a lot and your feet work a lot.
How do your feet work?
Like this?
Levitt steps on one part of the tendon and uses her arms to work on splitting a part of it away. She actually enjoys the work, in part because it's so all-consuming.
Everything just falls into place. The problems, the stress, the thoughts you have, most of them just disappear.
And all of the effort pays off when whaling crews get home safely with a new season of whale to feed the community. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik.
13 tribes in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta are appealing two key state permits for the proposed Donlin gold mine. Environmental group Earth Justice filed the appeal on their behalf. The Alaska Department of Natural Resources approved Donlin Gold's reclamation plans and waste management plans last month, but the 13 tribes that opposed Donlin say their concerns about the mine were ignored by regulators. The Donlin Gold Mine could be the biggest in the world if completed, and its opponents fear a mining accident could contaminate the Kuskokwim River, the biggest food source for the region. Donlin Gold, the company developing the mine, has said that it plans to build the mine as safely as possible. The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race officially begins with a ceremonial start March 2nd, but preparations are underway for care of dogs along the trail. KTVA reports about 60 people this week helped with the annual straw drop, distributing the material on which sled dogs sleep at checkpoints. Race Marshal Mark Nordman says the race is sending out more than 1,000 straw bales. The Schultz Farms in Delta sent three semi-truckloads of straw and hay to Anchorage for the drop. The bales were unloaded at Airland Transport in Anchorage. All bales were bagged to keep them from littering aircraft. Most of the bales are sent using bypass mail rates to rural Alaska. The race food drop will begin next week. And looking at weather, 26 degrees, few clouds at Juneau International Airport. Tonight, clear with a low around 22.